More than 6 months have passed since the military staged a coup which ended the country's experiment with democracy. But until today, Myanmar remains in a state of turmoil.
State functions are breaking down. That's very clear.
Adding to its woes, a new wave of COVID-19 infections is now sweeping across the country. Deaths in the capital city, Yangon alone, have exceeded 2,000 per day in recent weeks.
COVID-19 patient ni a yan mya bi lowa outbreak phit pyo disaster ta khu lo mo phin ni bu no.
Where are the international aid agencies? Why has the global response to Myanmar's political and humanitarian crisis fallen to the wayside?
Will the civil unrest and the worsening health crisis plunge Myanmar deeper into its darkest era? And will the people's hope for the return of democracy remain just a dream? A humanitarian catastrophe is looming in Myanmar. 6 months after a military takeover on February 1st, 2021. Security forces have already killed more than 1,000 civilians in the aftermath of the coup, which toppled democracy icon and leader of National League of Democracy, Aung San Suu Kyi, from power. And now, an uncontrolled third wave of COVID-19 is sweeping across the country of 54 million people. More than 2,000 new COVID infections have been reported each day, bringing the total number to more than 373,000 cases so far. And almost 15,000 people have died from the disease. Adding to the chaos and confusion, state hospitals and clinics have been shut for the past 6 months. A majority of the healthcare workers have gone on strike to join the growing civil disobedience movement against military rule. Their actions have disrupted government functions and put the entire healthcare system on the verge of collapse. 29-year-old Nay is one of them. The public health medical doctor, however, remains torn between helping patients who are in need of treatment and working for a military government which has launched a brutal crackdown against his fellow citizens. Dr. Ney could only speak to Insight on condition of anonymity out of fear for his safety.
The COVID-19 ga lowa outbreak phit twar le atwat lu le dor dor ma ma ti ja ko no he ko ka le kong kong mya ti ja le ya ma ho sia won ni ya le ဟိုလိုပြောမလဲဆောင်းရရတဲ့ဒီပြည်ရန်ဆောင်ရတာနဲ့နောက်ဒီလူတွေရဲ့ဒီ health education လည်းမကောင်းတာနဲ့တစ်ချက်နဲ့ဆိုတော့တော်တော်များများဒုက္ခရောက်နေကြတာပေါ့เนาะအခုနေလူနိုင်ရဲများလာလို့အိန္ဒိယလိုcrisis ဖြစ်နေပါပြီဖြစ်နေပြီမဲ့လည်းကျွန်တော်အနေနဲ့အပြန်အလှန်ပဲရသလောက်ကိုမယ်ပေါ့เนาะဒီဆရာနိုင်ရှင်ရှိတယ်ရတော့ကျွန်တော်တို့ပြန်မသွားဘူးလို့လုံးဝဆုံးဖြတ်ချက်ချတာပါ
According to Ney, it was doctors and the medical civil disobedience movement. Apart from expressing their strong disapproval against the military takeover, it's also done to starve the government of its legitimacy to govern.
ဒီကာလဖြစ်ပြီးရင်စစ်သားရဲကိုတော်တော်ကြီးကိုဘယ်လိုပြောရလဲရှင်စရာတက်တော့လို့ထင်ပါတော့ခဲ့ပြီပေါ့เนาะကျွန်တော် NLD လဲကြိုက်တဲ့သူမဟုတ်ကျွန်တော်မှဒီ NLD ကို second wave လောက်ဆိုရင်ဒီ NLD ကိုကျွန်တော်ထိတ်ဆုံးဟန်နေပြီးတော့ဆဲခဲ့တဲ့အချိန်မှာပါတယ်ပေါ့เนาะ ဈေးဥမာနဲ့လို့လူနာတွေကို common management မလုပ်နိုင်တော့တက်ကပါလုပ်နေလဲဆိုပြောခဲ့တဲ့အချိန်မှာပါတယ်။ဒါပေမဲ့အခုစေစိုးရအလုပ်တာတက်ကိုအများကြီးတော့ဒါနေပါသေးတယ
်။ Meanwhile, the health situation in Myanmar is deteriorating rapidly.With some 60,000 public hospital beds being denied to the people. Thousands of COVID-19 infected citizens are left gasping breathlessly at home, unattended in the final moments of their lives.
They are suffering tremendously under this infection. Right now, the reports show that there are already more than 240,000 cases.These are people that we know. Many of these places, cities, urban areas, not to mention the countryside, they have no testing. So we really cannot be sure how many people are infected.
The political turmoil has exacted a terrible cost on the people. When the coup took place on February 1st this year, the protesters took the streets to rally against a power grab for weeks and months.Ignoring warnings over the potential spread of the coronavirus. No surprise then that the large gatherings became the perfect super spreader scenario for the coronavirus. The number of people killed directly because of the coup is almost 1,000, but COVID has claimed 10 times more than that. Experts estimate that by the end of August, half the population of 54 million people will be infected by the virus.Hospitals, which are still in operations, are collapsing under the overwhelming weight of patient load. Many of the sick and wounded are simply turned away, left to their own fate.
And right now, we're actually facing a situation that Myanmar is a typical failed state in a sense that the state, the central government, right, did not really have any capacity to deal with the COVID, pandemic.The humanitarian crisis is quite huge in a country that is a poor, a lack of infrastructure, but also lack of a state capacity to regulate or provide for its citizens, right? So this in some ways is a tragedy.
It wasn't long before the military started to arrest the doctors on strike, dubbing them the enemies of the state.The military has reportedly apprehended some 140 CDM doctors, thus pushing the already fragile healthcare system to the brink of total collapse. Many CDM doctors, like Ney, have been secretly making house calls to treat patients out of their sense of duty to care for the sick and dying.
လိုပဲကျွန်တော်မှလူနာအစပိုင်းတော့ကျွန်တော်မှလူနာကြီးဖို့အစီအကူမရှိဘူးမိတ်ဆွေတွေရဲ့ဒီအိမ်ရလူတွေကိုကြည့်ပြီးနေကျွန်တော်နောက်ဆုံးတော့ငါလူနာကြည့်ပြီးတော့မယ်ဆိုပြီးတော့ဖြစ်သွားတာပေါ့နော်မထူးတော့ဘူးလို့ဆိုပြီးတော့ကြည့်ပြီးဖြစ်တယ်ကြည့်ပြီးနေအဲ့ရကျွန်တော်မှလူနာတွေရလာပြီပေါ့နော်ပြောရရင်တော့ကိုယ့်အကူလက်လန်းမီတဲ့နောက်လူနာလေးကိုကယ်နိုင်တဲ့နောက်လူနာလေးတွေကိုရအောင်ကယ်ဖို့တော့ကိုဒီနေတိုင်းမှစူးစမ်းနေရပေါ့နော်ပြန်လာလို့ရှိရင်လည်းစောစုံကျွန်တော်ပြန်ရောက်လို့ရှိရင်7နိုင်ကျော်9နိုင်နီးနီးလောက်ပဲအဲ့ချိန်မှာထမင်းစား
But that's not enough to contain the spread of the virus. So far, only 3.2% of the country's 54 million people have been fully vaccinated. It's a frightening scenario which leaves the people highly susceptible to the viral infection.
I think we've all seen those terrible pictures.Social media of corpses, you know, piled the back of crematoriums or just left outside hospitals. So they're the ones who are paying the price. And I think what's really clear is that the military lacks the capacity, the legitimacy, and I think also lacks the will to actually confront this COVID-19 wave in any real and reasonable way.
And today, as the virus continues its unrelenting spread and claiming lives,The military continues its violent purge of the protesters. Although the military has consolidated its position, resistance against their rule remains strong.
I
know, I can go, you know, time here, who sips in the week, sips in the chin, you know, Joe Guinea. And a second in the name of the Nia Mama school to Taiwan, Mia Tina, you like finding. You do let the Damelu, the Luba got Yola get the tie.
Is Myanmar descending into a civil war? Can regional groupings like ASEAN afford to sit back quietly and allow one of its members to turn into a failed state? Will ASEAN be able to coax Myanmar's military back into a democratic process and prevent it from becoming a pariah state once again?
The concern is that the Tamadaw might just quit ASEAN. If they volunteer to go into isolation, what can we do?
It's 6 months after, and the military seems to have gained the upper hand in managing the impact of the post-coup aftershocks. Aung San Suu Kyi, as well as hundreds of other state and party leaders from the previous NLD government, are now behind bars. More than 1,000 civilians have been killed after the military went on an all-out campaign to suppress dissent and opposition to its rule. Thousands of protesters have also been detained. Today, the protests have been largely sporadic and small-scale in nature. But the military success in toppling the popularly elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi has also come at a huge cost to the country. Nationwide, civil disobedience movement has brought the nation's economy to its knees. The healthcare system is also on the brink of collapse. Grocery shop owner Ko To, for one, can't hold back his anger and frustration. He feels the military takeover has destroyed everything that the country has built over the last 10 years. He spoke to Insight on condition of anonymity as well, due to fears of his safety.
အိမ်မှာပဲစိတ်ကူးရမှာလားဆိုဆရာဝန်ရလဲဘယ်ကနေခေါ်လို့ပေါ့ဆရာဝန်တရားတစ်ခါဆရာဝန်တို့ကြင်ပြမို့လဲမလွယ်ဘူးလေအဲ့တော့သူလည်းတော့ကျမကြီးတင်နေပြောမှာဆိုရင်တော့ဩညလင်းချက်မဲ့အခုရမဲ့နေတဲ့အခြေအနေကိုဖြစ်နေတဲ့ကျမကြီးနံပါတ်၁လက်တလုံးမှာနေသက်ကသွင်းလာတယ်ကော်ဖီတို့ဟိုစက်ပြာတို့ဟုတ်လားဒီနုံးနေပြောင်းသွားတယ်ပြောင်းလဲနေဖြစ်သွားတယ်သူကြီးခေါင်းနဲ့ပြီးပွဲရ
မဲ့ဘုံသဘောတူညီချက်ကတော့ဆရာမရှင်စနစ်ကိုဖယ်ရှားရေးပဲเนาะကျွန်တော်တိုင်းကြီးမှာဆရာမရှင်စနစ်အဆုံးနိုင်ပြီးပြဖို့ပြောလို့မှာ
That same sentiment is also shared by Zani and other ordinary citizens in Myanmar. They feel that freedom and democracy have been robbed from them the moment the military grabbed power in February.
အခုအခြေအနေကတော့ကျွန်တော်တို့အနေနဲ့ပြောရမယ်ဆိုတော့တော်တော်အခြေအနေဆိုးရယ်လို့ပြောလို့ရပါတော့เนาะအဲဘာဖြစ်လို့လဲဆိုတော့ကျွန်တော် February 1ရက်နေ့အာနာစတင်ပြီးကြတဲ့အစည်းအဝေးတွေလည်းအကုန်ထိုးကျသွားတယ်အခုဆိုကျွန်တော်တို့နိုင်ငံသားရင်းနှီးမြှုပ်နှံထားတဲ့ပုံစံမျိုးတော့များလည်းထွက်နေတာတွေ့ရတယ်အဲတော့စည်းအဝေးအနေနဲ့ကလည်းလုံးဝအဆင်မပြေဘူးနိုင်ငံရေးအနေနဲ့ကလည်းကျွန်တော်တို့အနည်းဆုံးရန်ကုန်မှာနည်းနည်းတည်နေနေဆိုရင်တော့မတခြားနေရာဒီမှာတွေကဟိုစစ်ဖြစ်တာပေါ့နော်အဲ့လိုဖြစ်ဖြစ်တဲ့ဟာတွေပါနေဆိုတော့တော်တော်အခြေအနေဆိုးနေလို့ပြောလို့ရပါတယ်အာနာသိန်းနေဆိုကြတာတော့နိုင်ငံတော်သွားပြီအဲဝမ်းနေပေါ့နော်ဒီရတခုကနောက်တစ်ခုကကြောင့်ဒေါသဖြစ်တယ်ဗျာဒေါသဖြစ်တယ်ဆိုတာကျွန်တော်တို့ရဲ့ဟိုဘယ်လိုပြောရမလဲအနာဂတ်တွေကို
The military regime and the elected civilian government have shared power for the past 10 years After being under house arrest for 15 years democracy icon Aung San Suu Kyi was finally freed in 2010In 2011, General Thein Sein began to introduce democratic reforms. He also paved the way for the country's first free and open elections. In the 2015 general elections, Aung San Suu Kyi and her party, the NLD, won a sweeping victory, taking 86% of the available seats in the National Assembly. However, the 2008 military-drafted constitution mandated that 25% of the assembly be reserved for the military. In effect, the military's permanent role in the constitution is guaranteed, with or without elections. But at least, the people could live under relative freedom.
From the very beginning, I mean, the military and civilian hybrid government launched very exciting plans. First of all, I mean, what they wanted to do, we saw in 2012, 2013, a robust plan to alleviate poverty. I mean, that was the biggest push, because they knew that socioeconomic issues were at the heart of the country's main woes, that they needed to focus on eliminating poverty, but also investing in infrastructure, especially education, health, and public. And we saw a lot of countries, both from the region and from all over, step in to help with that process. People were very excited about this.
But the sense of excitement was short-lived. After 10 years of freedom and newfound opportunities, authoritarian rule and repression made a comeback in Myanmar. What followed soon after the February coup was an increasingly brutal crackdown of the security forces against those who opposed the military takeover. All of a sudden, the people of Myanmar have had to grapple with the new crushing reality that their fragile 10-year democracy might well be over. Meanwhile, Myanmar's closest neighbours in ASEAN, which had worked hard to help Myanmar's transition into a democracy, could only watch with disbelief and growing trepidation over the sudden turn of events. After almost 3 months since the February 1st coup, the long-promised ASEAN emergency meeting took place on April 24th in Jakarta. But instead of getting a representative from the National Unity Government, or NUG, a shadow cabinet made up of elected politicians from the former NLD, ASEAN invited the mastermind of the military coup, General Min Aung Hlaing, to the summit.
I don't think that the Tatmadaw is the de facto recognized government of Myanmar. I think we're still a long way off from General Min Aung Hlaing being invited to join the group photo at ASEAN. I think ASEAN has put itself in an unwinnable situation. It's really had to make a choice between whether ASEAN stands for principles or if ASEAN is just an alliance of commercial minds, if it's just an alliance of people who want to ignore the fact that one of their neighbors is burying a body in the backyard.
I think ASEAN's response was a practical decision. I think they knew that the NUG is very, very weak and that they're probably not down the road going to be a serious stakeholder, despite the support from many international stakeholders and so forth. ASEAN chose to invite them because they knew them and they knew how they could work, and they knew that any sort of future, political future, is going to have to involve the military. And so I think it was just a practical decision that was probably unpopular for those who, you know, saw the elections as being the real sort of signal for who should be in government.
After the meeting, ASEAN then released a 5-point statement on the crisis in Myanmar. Among other things, it called for an immediate cessation of violence, as well as to appoint an envoy to take part in mediation and reconciliation efforts. The summit, however, did not explicitly condemn the power grab by the Myanmar military. At a special ASEAN meeting in April, all members, including Myanmar's General Min Aung Hlaing, agreed to the 5-point consensus. But the violent crackdown continued even after the conclusion of the consensus.
The ASEAN's role has been very important in the fact that they reacted very quickly and convened the meeting in Jakarta to establish the 5-point consensus. But since that time, it's been rough going for ASEAN. They've been unable to agree on some of the points and strategies that have been established in the beginning. And part of this has to do with the issue of violence that continued on in the ethnic areas. And that continuing violence seemed to suggest for some ASEAN members, as well as international observers, that the Myanmar military had no intention of keeping to the agreement.
On August 4th, after protracted negotiations, ASEAN finally appointed a special envoy to Myanmar, Second Foreign Minister Brunei Erwan Yusof. Mr. Yusof has pledged to meet all parties in the crisis, including the opposition NUG and detained leaders like Aung San Suu Kyi. This, however, remains unlikely to be accepted by the military caretaker government, as they have branded the NUG as terrorists, essentially ruling out any engagement.
It looks like there is a bankruptcy of ideas. There's no way to move forward. ASEAN as a group cannot just take things into its own hand, because after all, we work together on this so-called 5-point consensus, so we should try to stick to it. Yeah, and it makes sense. What other options are there? But if the military leadership is not prepared to talk to anybody until the other side agree there is a peaceful way to go forward, then where are we?
I think what ASEAN has squandered was its opportunity to show itself as a true regional leader in terms of principles around human rights and around trying to deal with conflict in its own zone. Instead, it finds itself in this weird position where it's established these principles which the military has almost immediately said that it's going to ignore. The plan that they put in place has gone absolutely nowhere.
If ASEAN hasn't been able to move the needle on negotiations with the Tatmadaw, who else in the world will have leverage over the isolated regime? Or is Myanmar simply not a priority of the global community, which is still struggling to cope with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Right now, within Myanmar itself, there has been quite a lot of, disillusionment about the international community no longer cares of what's going on in the country.
It was touted as one of the world's fastest growing economies. With an average growth of more than 7% annually, Myanmar's transition to democracy had offered hope for a much brighter future. Foreign investments surged from $900 million US dollars in 2010 to $4 billion in 2017. Its GDP reached $1,400 in 2019, almost double from the 2008 figures. Poverty levels also fell dramatically, from 48% in 2005 to 25% 4 years ago. But all these achievements soon evaporated following the February coup this year. The country's economy is now teetering on the verge of collapse some 6 months after the military coup. Observers say it's expected to shrink by 20% this year.
The Myanmar economy is in freefall. The businesses are closing, 1.5 people seem to be unemployed, and we're already on the brink of poverty anyway.
In an economic crisis, it's always the ordinary people who suffer the most. The world, as they see it, is now in disarray, as joy turns into sorrow and dreams crushed. So far, the international community has been unable to arrive at a consensus on how best to deal with the crisis and help restore democracy in the country. The US has slapped economic sanctions on military figures who led the coup, as well as three companies with direct links to the Tatmadaw. The US leader also warned the Myanmar generals there could be more economic punishment ahead. During her first official trip to Asia recently, US Vice President Kamala Harris again reiterated the country's support and commitment for the Myanmar people in their attempts to restore democracy in the country.
The United States remains deeply alarmed by the military coup in Burma. We condemn the campaign of violent repression, and we are committed to supporting the people there as they work to return their nation to the path of democracy.
But according to critics, the U.S. response to the crisis has been tepid and somewhat subdued.
I think the U.S. response has been muted mainly because they have so many other issues to deal with. The U.S. had 500,000 people die of COVID, and they are still struggling, and numbers are going up. So I think they had a domestic economy that's also suffered, from COVID. I don't think they have the bandwidth to be able to focus their resources and attention, on Myanmar.
The sanctions are, in general, symbolic. They don't really have any necessary sort of direct implications of how the regime is changing under the pressure, right? So it's more of a gesture rather than actual sort of capacity to influence. So I also don't think US can do more unless, for example, there is direct military intervention, but which is unlikely, right? It's very unlikely. There is not really that much economic or strategic interest US has on Myanmar.
I like to believe that they sincerely accept the idea that ASEAN can do something. That's very flattering. But I think it is more a case of right now they are too preoccupied elsewhere with other more challenging geopolitical and geostrategic concern. So they look at the option they have, they say, okay, this is a no-win situation. We might as well let the ASEAN collective take care of it.
If the US and ASEAN seem to be running out of ideas on how best to deal with the crisis, hopes now rest on China to help de-escalate tensions or perhaps broker an internal deal to bring an end to the ongoing conflict. But even China's response has been mixed. For example, it had blocked a UN Security Council statement condemning the coup. It maintained that the impositions or economic sanctions on Myanmar or any sort of international pressure would worsen the situation in the country. Economically, Myanmar is also important to China. It's the second largest foreign investor in Myanmar, with some $21 billion invested in the energy, oil and gas sectors, and a key strategic ally.
So the main reason is because the existing investment by China is quite substantial, right? So investment, particularly from China, in infrastructure, in pipelines. So these are a lot of like sunk costs involved in building those pipelines and like building like, you know, hydropower dams and you know, working in those mines. Like these are like really long-term investments, right? So in some ways, you have a lot of things to lose if you antagonize the military government.
It has massive influence, and I think it's just a question of whether they're prepared to flex their muscles in that regard, keeping in mind that it's a major trading partner of Myanmar. It's also a major supplier of military weapons and of political support in other sorts of ways. It could certainly exert a lot more pressure on the Tatmadaw and on the generals if it chose to do so.
Is it fair to say that China can actually do more to influence the Tatmadaw to restore peace and order?
Absolutely. I mean, even if this doesn't seem to fit in with their strategic, you know, choices, they could certainly, at the UN Security Council, for example, just decide to abstain from discussions on what should be done in Myanmar, which would enable the rest of the international community to take action collectively and to uphold international law and to uphold international principles. They could do that without kind of losing too much face, but they won't even do that.
I said I don't think China can do more, right? It is against its traditional foreign policy behavior. You know, like one of the few things about Chinese foreign policy that often is a bit taboo for Beijing, right? One of them is regime change, right? So any mention of regime change, China would like to veto.
The reality is, countries are now grappling with the impact of the global pandemic. COVID-19 has gravely wounded world economies, disrupted lives and livelihoods of people all across the globe. These existential issues have distracted them from other pressing developments affecting the region. And that has worked in favor of the military in Myanmar.
So this is a calculation. If you look at everything that we are confronted with, it is, in my opinion, well within the assessment of the strategies working with the Tatmadaw in Myanmar. They see they can get away with it. So, put it bluntly, the timing of this meltdown in Myanmar is actually to the advantage of the people who perpetrated this military coup. Maybe they did not see so far, but as things go along, they became a bit more astute in exploiting the overall geopolitical situation to their advantage.
So, if the rest of the world is busy with their own domestic problems and can only watch Myanmar's deteriorating situation from the sidelines, who can pull the country from falling into the abyss and irrelevance? It all began on November 8, 2020. That was the day Aung San Suu Kyi and her party, the National League for Democracy, or the NLD, claimed a resounding election victory over the military-backed Union Solidarity and Development Party, or USDP. The NLD captured 396 out of 476 seats contested, allowing it to form the government for another five-year term. The USDP, on the other hand, suffered a humiliating defeat, securing a paltry 33 seats in parliament. The election result proved too much for the military leaders to swallow. And soon, The long-standing tensions between the leaders at the two camps, Aung San Suu Kyi and General Min Aung Hlaing, came to a head. Even before the election, trust between the military leaders and NLD had already hit rock bottom. While the army wanted power to be shared with the civilian government, the NLD wanted to see the end of the military's influence in the government. It even pushed for a constitutional amendment to reduce the number of seats reserved for the army from 25% to 10% after 2025. Another 5% after 2030, and eventually getting rid of all of them altogether in 2035. That had put the NLD on a collision course with the powerful military. The election outcome was indeed the final straw that broke the camel's back.
I think the civilian groups getting more and more strength and control, and that became maybe an alarming challenge for the military. Once they fail to negotiate with the civilian government that are increasingly more powerful.
When the NLD won the second elections in 2015, their changes started to occur. And her administration ran on a platform saying that they would change the constitution, thereby affecting the power sharing arrangement. And they pledged that that was the direction that they wanted to go, so that it would be more of a genuine democracy, as what they expected. But the military, of course, saw power sharing as needed to be in the beginning. And so that's where the tension started to rise.
And then on February 1st, 2021, the military seized power in a coup, pulling the plug on its much-touted but fragile democratic transition. The reason for the power grab? Alleged voter fraud and electoral irregularity.
When they went to the polls in November of 2020, the military greatly overestimated how popular they were. And I think it became very clear that not only that they lost that election, but they lost it so comprehensively that it was going to become increasingly difficult to hold back the kind of the tide of change which was coming. And so they opted to overthrow the entire process, overthrow the civilian-led government, and revert to some semblance of military rule.
But the return of military rule has given rise to the civil disobedience movement. Among them, it called on all civil servants to stop working until power is restored to the elected government. Healthcare workers, bankers, lawyers, teachers and engineers have all joined in the protest movement. The move has created a banking crisis and paralyzed the economy. Exports are down by 90% following refusal by bureaucrats and bank workers to return to work. And two-thirds of the country's hospitals have ceased to function properly after medical workers went on strike in protest against what they've described as an illegitimate government. But there are also those who've decided not to go along with the tide. 33-year-old primary school teacher Dor Mala is one of them. Since the February coup, all schools have been closed and the children have simply stopped formal learning. Mala disagrees with the civil disobedience movement and wants the children to go back to school. She doesn't care who's in charge. For her, the children's future comes first.
ဘုံချုပ်သားသမီးဘုံမှုသားသမီးလာတက်တယ်ဆိုတာတကြောင်လုံးမှာမလက်ချွေးယူလို့ဆဲရောက်တာမရှိဘူးကျောင်းသားတက်ရမှာဘုံကြီးသားသမီးဘုံချုပ်သားသမီးဆိုတာတကြောင်မှာမပါလိုက်ကျောင်းနေတာမရှိဘူးကိုယ်စီမှာပါရှိတယ်ဟိုပြန်ကြရရှိရဲ့ဈေးတဲ့သားသမီးတွေရှိရဲ့အလွန်ဆုံးအဆင်ပြေတဲ့သူကဟိုဆဲရောက်မှာတက်ရောက်တယ်လို့ပဲပါတယ်နည်းနည်းအဲ့တော့ငါတို့ဒီကျောင်းကိုပြေးလိုက်လို့ရှင်ဒီဟာတွေဘ
believes that both the civilian government and the military must negotiate and reach a compromise. According to her, Myanmar needs the cooperation of both parties for things to work out.
So,
အဲ့အတွက်ကြောင့်လို့စစ်တပ်ကြီးကိုအရန်အားပေးနေလားဆိုမဟုတ်ဘူးအားလုံးကဟိုအိမ်တအိမ်ပါလို့အမေကအမေလုံးလုံးလို့ရှင်အဖေကလည်းအဖေလုံးလုံးရပါပဲအမေမရှိလို့မရလို့အဖေမရှိလို့လည်းမရဘူးပေါ့အဲ့လိုသဘောမျိုးပေါ့
They need to share power using maybe a different structure different form based on the current constitution but they need to push that forward the fresh new shared power you know based on compromises based on interim transitional structures must be done in order for the country to move forward no one can win totally this is not a zero sum game in the country democracy is not about zero sum game you win some you lose some it's positive some and negotiators must lay that down on the table for all parties to accept that
but voices calling for compromise appear to be increasingly in the minority in Myanmar More than 1,000 civilians have been killed during the army's brutal crackdown against the protesters, while thousands others have been detained. That has left many in Myanmar bitterly disillusioned by the use of excessive force against unarmed civilians. They believe that compromise at this stage is no longer acceptable.
ဟိုညီနိုင်ရတာများပြီဗျာဥပမာလင်းပြောရမယ်ဆိုရင်ဘာလို့လဲကျွန်တော်တို့ဟိုးဟွာကလေးကတောက်လျှောက်တို့ညီနိုင်မျိုးတို့အာနာယူလာတာဗျာအာနာယူလာတော့အခုချိန်မှာတို့ညီကိုမညီနိုင်ရတော့လို့ကျွန်တော်ကတော့ယုံကြည်ရပေါ့နော်ဟိုမညီနိုင်လည်းမညီနိုင်တဲ့တော့တို့လောက်ခဲ့တဲ့လောက်ရက်တွေပေါ့မူတည်ပြီးတော့အခုအချိန်မှာမဟုတ်ဘူးအရင်တော့အတန်ကားတွေကိုတတ်ခဲ့တာအရင်တော့အចောင်းသားတွေကိုတတ်ခဲ့တာအများကြီးပဲဗျာ
တို့တော့ဒီဖြစ်ခဲ့ဘူးတဲ့အရာတွေရသူတို့တွေ negotiate လုပ်ပြီးခဲ့ရင်တောင်မှအောက်ကပြည်သူကလက်ခံမှာတော့လက်ခံမယ်လို့လုံးဝမထင်ဘူးပေါ့နော
် On August 1st, General Min Aung Hlaing appointed himself as Prime Minister of the new caretaker government. He has promised to hold elections in August 2023. However, in the same breath, he has also branded the National Unity Government, the NUG.The democratic coalition that's challenging the regime's legitimacy as terrorists.
And what of Aung San Suu Kyi's civilian government? Now that she's back in house arrest, what is her fate and the fate of Myanmar's democracy movement?
So, if you look at the Tamador leadership today, the younger one, including this current general, the sentimentality towards the lady is different from the sentimentality of the older generals who have retired but they are still alive. So with each passing year, basically her equity, as we can call it, is shrinking.
She is getting very old, right? She's already 75 years old, right? And also like her party right now, most of the, let's say, main leaders and then and key individuals are all under arrest in prison, right? So obviously there is this sort of national unity government, right? That is, some people are in exile, some people are in hiding, right? But it is not a real government in a sense.
But no one can count her out. So I think she remains one of the important forces to reckon you know in Myanmar politics for years to come she remains a beacon of hope for many people
hope however appears to be in short supply amongst the people in Myanmar covid continues its assault on the population scores are dying at home at a time when medical help is virtually non-existent amidst a raging pandemicWill there be a future for millions of people living under military rule in Myanmar?
Bu chin ni ya da ko ko nga ko dai na nga di ni ko be phit pi lo we naw khone law so be te twa ma la so be a chi ni ba phit me naw da pat ma ba phit me le so ma byaw nai na a chi ni ba ai lo yi byaw bo chano ma byaw dat ba bu
ana ma ga lo chano myaw le ja lo we wa ni de be ba ma byaw nai bu shi chi la ya lo we wa ni de paw ni de ai lo chano ba ma ma byaw nai de bu
All things put together, I feel that the regional and global geopolitical situation the interplay of domestic forces in Myanmar, and I would say the bravado of the Tamador leaders, they put this together and say, this is my chance. If I don't do it now, if I move another 3 years later, or make deals with Aung San Suu Kyi and let the Democrats have more room to solidify themselves, they will have to basically, at the end, accept the democratic solution. My own view, which I have not really said so in public in this manner that I'm going to say, is that I don't think the Tamador is prepared to give a civilian democratic group another shot at running Myanmar.
I think democracy can return to Myanmar, but I think a lot depends not only on the will of the people of Myanmar themselves, who have clearly expressed their desires. A lot depends on the extent to which the international community, whether it be the UN Security Council, ASEAN, big powers like China or the United States, to actually hold the junta accountable, increase the pressure on them, sending the signal that there can be no business as usual with a military junta that is waging war against its own people.
For the past 10 years, the people of Myanmar have tasted freedom, and many do not wish to return to the dark era of military rule. They're willing to persevere in their fight for justice and the return to democratic rule. But the road ahead will be littered with peril and pitfalls. As hope for any kind of outside intervention begins to fade, armed resistance has become the order of the day. Will Myanmar descend into a protracted civil war? What can be done to prevent the country from falling deeper into the abyss? The solution seems to lie within Myanmar and in the hands of its people.